There was a time when Christmas mattered more than ever. When we welcomed guests from near and far who brightened our spirits and strengthened our community. There was a time when the glow of candlelight reminded us that we can weather any storm. It was a time of hope. It was Christmas, this Christmas, at Biltmore. Plan your visit at biltmore.com.
Welcome back. This is Perspectives. It's the show where conversations about our differences show us more about the things that we have in common. I'm Candace Presley, and in the program right now, we're going to have a conversation about a critically urgent need in our community. There are 3,000 people in Georgia on the organ transplant list, and more than half of the people on the, actually 63% of the folks waiting on the kidney transplant list are people of color. So joining us now on the program today, we have Katie Payne, who is the executive director of LifeLink Georgia, and then Adorian Obuba, who is with WellStar, and she is a registered nurse, and she's got other things that I'm going to ask her about in the minute. But ladies, thank you for making the time to talk to us about such an important topic.
Happy to be here. Thanks.
Let me just start with some of the basics. Yes, thank you to Adorian. Katie, tell me about LifeLink. I think people sometimes have heard LifeLink, LifeLink of Georgia, may not understand exactly what it is, what you guys do. Tell us that.
Sure. LifeLink of Georgia actually partners with hospitals in our state to support and guide families as they establish their loved ones' legacies through organ and tissue donation. We also carry out the decisions of registered donors or their families and honor the life of each donor by providing organs and tissue for transplant to as many patients as possible.
And so that would be the primary difference between what LifeLink does and what the Red Cross does with respect to blood donations, correct?
Correct.
And Adorian, tell me why we've invited you to chat with all of us today. I know you've got an amazing story to share.
Well, I am a kidney recipient. I'm one of those that have benefited from organ donation. So I just wanted to be here to share my story and also to put a stamp on the importance and the very need of organ donors, because without donors, there is no story.
Tell me about your illness and how long ago did you receive your transplant?
4 years ago, April 20, 2020.
In the middle of COVID?
In the middle of
organ transplant?
Yes, I was not expecting it. It was
how terrifying was that for you?
I was scared. I was happy. I was all kinds of emotions because I had this pandemic going on, and I have this major surgery that was canceled because of the pandemic. And all of a sudden, I'm being called that I'm going to get a transplant done. So it's all kinds of emotions, but nothing trumps just being grateful to be called to get a kidney transplant.
And talk to me about the significance of that with you being a healthcare professional.
Say that again, please.
Talk to me about the significance of all of that with your being a healthcare professional.
Being a healthcare professional, more so in the field of nephrology where I work at, it's really, really important. And it comes together because I've gone through the disease. I've gone through the treatment plan. I know these patients, what they're going through. I may not know particularly their experiences individually, but I have a better understanding and I can better provide care for them. I can better be more understanding and just help understand them and care for them, because all they need is to be heard. Some of them just need to be heard and understood. And I'm there to inspire and to let them know kidney disease is not the end.
How long had you been ill with kidney disease before you knew that your survival was dependent upon an organ transplant?
I was diagnosed in 2010. I was just 31 years old in 2010. And I had just gone in for a normal checkup. And the doctor says your kidneys are not functioning at 100%. And I had to be referred to a nephrologist. So between 2010 and 2019, I got into the kidney failure in 2019. So it took about, I'll say 9 years for me to hit the point where I needed a kidney transplant to survive or to live.
What impact did having kidney disease have on the quality of life for you? How long were you able to continue working? Tell me how you thrived and survived between the time you got that diagnosis at age 31 until things got really bad 9 years later in 2019.
I cannot begin to tell you how outstanding kidney donation is. It changes your life. It's like night and day. I had stopped working in 20, I would say 15 or 14, thereabout, because I was so fatigued. I couldn't hold a full-time job. I mean, I couldn't get out of bed. I was so tired all the time. I had all this plethora of symptoms. Is it swelling of my hands? I couldn't put on sh I it was not a good sight. I was so sick that if I did not get a transplant, I or maybe start dialysis, where I was heading to at in 2020, because I my GFR was at about 10
What's
or
that
so.
GFR?
GFR is a glomerular filtration rate. It's the test of your kidney function. Okay. If it's below 60, you're looking at chronic kidney disease, because it's not at above 60 is termed normal. But if it's below 60, you have to get your kidneys, checked more often, because you're heading to like a CKD kind of situation. Kidney transplant changes your life. So when I got that transplant, I was actually in nursing school for completing my, nursing degree when I got the call. So I had the support of my professors, my colleagues, and I was writing exams 4 days after. That's how significant organ donation is. I wasn't that tired. I was filled with so much energy. So the organ donation is really so important. People have no idea how it changes lives. And I'm just out here just to let everybody know that it's such an amazing thing to save a life just by donating your organs.
Talk to us a bit about the current state of organ donation in Georgia, and how are you increasing the number of donors and increasing the number of transplant surgeries?
About 62.9% of Georgia's waiting list is considered African American, and 11% of that list is considered other minorities. For the national transplant waiting list, African Americans represent the largest group of minorities who are currently waiting for an organ transplant. So in Georgia, we are partnering with our donor hospitals to launch a new campaign for us this week. It's called the Infinity Campaign. So it features a series of real stories from registered donors, each telling what inspired them to register as a donor and emphasizing the effect that this decision can have on saving lives. So we are launching this campaign and hoping to provide more education, and outreach and experience, and making sure that the community is aware of the opportunity for organ donation.
What are some of the challenges that the organization faces in getting more people to register to be an organ donor, someone who could save a Dorian's life?
I think there are a lot of things at play. One, trust in the healthcare system is difficult. I know, especially post-pandemic, there are a lot of members of our community who are concerned about going into a hospital, or who are concerned that a hospital might not take care of them fully, to make sure that they try and save their life first. And one really important thing to know is that the hospital staff have no idea of your registry status when you go into the hospital. Their only goal is to try to save your life and to make sure that they are caring for you as the patient right in front of them. They have no idea about your registry status. They're not looking at your driver's license, any of those myths that might come up. So that is a big concern, I know, for a lot of people, that maybe they won't be cared for, but that is not how this process works at all.
Well, then walk us through the process from the moment a donor passes away to that organ being transplanted into a recipient and saving a life.
Sure. We have really, really compassionate and talented people who work with us, who go into these hospitals. And when they get a referral for a possible patient, they talk to each family member whether to say that your loved one is already registered or to talk to them about the opportunity to be a donor. They walk them through that whole process. They make sure that they're comfortable with that idea and discuss, you know, the legacy that a donor can have on all of these individuals that they could possibly save. Once that happens and the family has agreed and said yes, or the person was already registered, then we start doing lots of testing on that donor to make sure we know which organs are going to be a good match for someone else. We put all of that information into a national computer system, and that computer system then matches the organs with that, with recipients. So we don't get to choose who those organs go to. No one is making that decision. It's actually all done through a computer algorithm that's very sophisticated and matches all of those organs to the recipients who are in dire need of those life-saving organs.
Talk to us about the significance of the numbers you shared, the numbers of people of color who are on that waiting list, and why that is a challenge that needs to be addressed immediately.
So unfortunately, there are a large number of, especially African-Americans in our community, who do suffer from renal disease. There are many reasons for that. Some of them are genetic based, and some of those are, there's not a great primary care system in a lot of parts of our state. And so a lot of African-Americans suffer with renal disease. There's also lots of high histories of hypertension and diabetes in Georgia in general. And so our community at large suffers at a higher rate with kidney disease than many other states. So it is a difficult, it's a difficult thing to get through to our community that they really need to make sure that they're doing exactly what Adorian did, which is going to see her primary care physician and making sure that she's getting checked regularly so that she's staying healthy. But that is really at the key of being a healthy donor as well. So making sure that you're taking care of yourself and that you're doing your regular checkups and making sure that your family is also aware of your health as well.
Katie, a couple of questions. And you said that you have very highly trained, very sensitive team members who have these conversations with families who have lost or may be losing a loved one. How do you approach those conversations when a family is having such a difficult time?
I can tell you from experience, my brother was actually a donor in 2004. I was just 21 years old at the time. So, needless to say, I wasn't super aware or with it when that conversation was happening. When you have just lost something, one of the most important things in your life, such as a sibling or a parent or anything like that, a child, we're asking you for something. In that moment of loss, when you have lost something, we're now coming and asking you for something. And that is one of the most delicate but passionate experiences that you can have. When LifeLink called me to let me know that my brother had the opportunity to be a tissue donor, again, I could only hear probably 10 words out of the whole conversation. But the thing that stays with me the most is that the woman on the other end of the phone, whom I don't know, even though I work at LifeLink now, sorry, it gets me every time still, was thoughtful and considerate and compassionate. She knew that I had just lost my best friend, and she told me all of the wonderful things that he could do after his life was over and how he could live on through someone else. And that hope has stayed with me. And now my kids know about donation. Everyone that's in my life knows about donation, because when you've lost someone, it gives you hope for the future when you know that someone else is benefiting from that.
Adorian, if you could speak to the donor who provided your kidney, what would you say to them?
Thank you is not enough. I actually wrote to them 1 year after I was able to get myself together, because transplantation is not easy. Even though it's a good thing, there's a lot of emotions involved. Somebody had to die for you to get that organ. So it took me 1 year to write to this family, and they were so gracious. I told them I was able to continue Bella's legacy. That was her name. She was 9 years old. By becoming a nephrology nurse, where I can care for people at risk or who are dealing with this disease. And they were so very happy. And they thanked me so much for reaching out to them, because they had often wondered where Bella's organ went, who Bella's organ went to. So thank you is not enough. Thank you so much to this family who found it. I know it wasn't easy for them to make that decision at the time they were losing their child, but they agreed to donate Bella's organs, and I'm so very grateful.
Katie, when someone makes the decision to be an organ donor, potentially how many lives can that one donor save?
So they can save up to 9 lives, but with through tissue donation as well, they can potentially impact up to 75 people.
How does LifeLink support those donor families as well as the recipients throughout the process beyond when someone like a Dorian gets the organ and begins to recover? And as you said, you wrote to your family a year later to thank them for Bella's kidney. Katie?
Or LifeLink, once you are a donor family or a donor in spirit family, meaning that you attempted to donate, but maybe the recipients were not there at that time, you are a part of our family forever. So we are a resource available to any donor family, donor in spirit family, no matter what. So we have people who call us 10 years down the road and say, I'm struggling. And we have some staff who are specifically assigned to help those families. We provide resources for them. A lot of other organ procurement organizations also have grief counseling available to families. And so we will make sure that we take care of that family for as long as they want to be in our lives. We will always be there for them no matter what.
You mentioned one earlier in our conversation, but talk to us about the initiatives or programs that LifeLink has in place to, again, raise awareness as we are seeking to do right now and to educate the community about organ donation across our state.
Sure. So as I mentioned, we're launching the Infinity Campaign. It's a statewide educational effort represented by the Infinity symbol. So demonstrating that organ and tissue donations lasting impact and highlighting the need for more registered donors in Georgia. When you become an organ donor, your life story continues through the lives you save, ensuring that your legacy lives on indefinitely. And so that Infinity Campaign and that Infinity symbol is something that we are reaching out to the community about right now. And hoping that anyone who is interested or wants to share their story or register to become a donor visits mystorycontinues.com.
Are there any recent technological or medical advancements in organ transplantation that have had a significant impact on saving more lives like Adorian's?
Absolutely. There are so many exciting things happening in donation and transplant. One of the biggest ones has been, you might have heard Heart in a Box. That has been on several TV shows and on several news broadcasts. But it's actually a way to pump an organ with normal blood so that it feels warm and it feels like it's still inside of the body, prolonging that organ's life and allowing it to go further distances. So it used to be you might see someone walking around with a cooler that says organ in it, and it may have lots of ice and we're keeping it cold. But organs don't really like that. They want to be, perfused with the blood. They want to be in someone's body. And so the ability to move those around the country in that state allows them to last longer, and it actually benefits the recipient because it never had to go all the way cold and then try and come back out of that. So that's one of the most exciting things that's happening. And it's really changed the landscape for recipients too.
But we still have
We still
doctors
have,
traveling with the boxes to get from the donor to the life that's going to be saved.
Yes, we do still have that as well.
What advice would you have to folks who are thinking about becoming organ donors but still are concerned or might be hesitant?
I would do research online. You can go to My Story Continues and listen to the other people who've decided to become registered donors to hear what their stories are and why they made that decision. I also recommend talking to your family and your friends and your coworkers and making sure that they know what your decision is. Understand why they've decided to become a donor. You'd be surprised how many people you encounter who have some sort of connection to donation or transplant. I don't think anyone really thinks that I have this experience from my adolescence, but if they were to ask me, it's one of the most important things about me now. And recipients who are walking around, you may never know. I had to have some plumbing done on my house recently last week, and the plumber who was here said, "What do you do for a living?" And I said, "Oh, I work in organ donation." And he lifted up his shirt, and he had had a liver transplant 10 years ago. And he was asking me if I knew a surgeon, and I said, "Yeah, he's a great guy." And so, you never know who really is connected to donation or transplant and how it affects those around you. So my biggest advice is to do some research, but also just to talk to everyone you know about it, letting them know your decision and also understanding why they've made that decision for themselves.
Are there any individuals, lifestyles, or conditions that would prevent someone from being an organ donor?
There really isn't. You would think that we hear all the time from families, there's no way he can be a donor. There's no way she could be a donor. And honestly, allow the organ procurement organization, LifeLink of Georgia, and our service area to make that decision. My mantra to everyone who works for us is you never know who's on the list today. And even though this organ may not be perfect, it could be the thing that gets them off dialysis today, or it could be the thing that saves their life and gets them to tomorrow. And that is our only mission, is to make sure that we are making those connections and opportunities happen for those on the wait list.
Doreen, tell me how your recovery went.
My recovery was eventful. When I had the transplant at first, the very first one, it thrombosed. There was no perfusion. So it actually literally failed and they couldn't save it. And so they, because it was COVID time, I always tell people that COVID was good to me, but I don't like to say it because people died during COVID, but it was good to me because I was able to get a second kidney that was supposed to have left to someone else, but there was no plane to fly there. So I had the second, I know it's really a miracle. So I had the second kidney placed in, and that's what I have up till now. And it's been great. It's been amazing.
Do you continue to have to take anti-rejection medication and all the things that you need to, that's part of the process for the rest of your life, correct?
You, but it's like a double-edged sword. It's a constant fight between your body trying to reject them, keeping your body from rejecting that organ, because that organ is a foreign body. Mm-hmm. So what we do is that we take this immunosuppressants to suppress our immune system so it doesn't reject that organ. But what that immunosuppressant does is also suppresses other parts of the body that could help fight normal infections that other people like you could fight, but I can't fight it. So I get infections easily. And so I really have to be careful.
Katie, can a transplant recipient be an organ donor at the end of his or her life?
Yes, we actually had that happen recently. So sadly, when an organ recipient may have passed, or maybe their organ was not able to save their life, they're still able to donate other organs. And so we hear that regularly from families who have had a recipient that this is exactly what this recipient would want because they benefited as well.
And donating organs does not in any way impact a grieving family's ability perhaps to have a viewing, open casket ceremonies. Sometimes you hear from families who are like, well, you know, that's one of the reasons why they might say no.
No, it does not impact that at all. We make sure that if a family is going to have an open casket or a viewing, that we are honoring that wish, and we will work with funeral homes to make sure that we provide them with all the resources necessary to make sure that the family has exactly what they need in the end of life.
Ladies, if there's only one thing I would say that our listeners right now remember about our conversation today, what would you have that be? Katie, I'll start with you, and then Adorian, I'll leave you with the last word.
The one thing I would say is you don't realize, but today you can have an impact on someone that you may never meet. And that is a gift that we all have as we walk through this life. And so if you are thinking about it, now is the time to go to mystorycontinues.com and register to be an organ and tissue donor.
Adorian?
You never think of organ donation until it hits home. So what I would say is, please consider being an organ donor, because you are saving a life. You're giving somebody's another person's mom or dad a second chance, or more days with their families, or you're saving a kid from getting more time with their parents. It's just, I know it looks like a simple decision. I know it's not easy, but I would want you to please research, educate yourself on organ donation, and make your own informed decision, and you would not regret it. Donating an organ is not something that you regret doing, I promise you.
And Katie, one last time, the web address you want us to visit?
MyStoryContinues.com.
Ladies, thank you so much for your time. I appreciate you.
Thank you.
Perspectives is a community and public affairs program produced with you in mind. If there's a guest or an issue you'd like for us to explore, just let me know. The easiest way to connect is via social media. Simply search my name, Condice Presley, on Facebook, Instagram, or X. As for how to spell my name, it's simple. Condace is an O, C-O-N-D-A-C-E. Presley is two S's, P-R-E-S-S-L-E-Y. Friends, I so appreciate your listening. I hope you'll join us again next week at this same time as we explore new perspectives.
There was a time when Christmas mattered more than ever. When we welcomed guests from near and far who brightened our spirits and strengthened our community. There was a time when the glow of candlelight reminded us that we can weather any storm. It was a time of hope. It was Christmas, this Christmas, at Biltmore. Plan your visit at biltmore.com.